You're listening to Donuts and Top Cow.
Two great tastes that taste better together.
Thank you for listening. My name is John Grigas.
Mine's Josh Crawley.
And we're here at episode 9 of Donuts and Top Cow.
Holy cow.
So Donuts and Top Cow is a member of the Comic Book Noise family of podcasts. If you want to see some great podcasts covering a lot of subjects, but mainly comics on the Comic Book Noise site, go to www.comicbooknoise.com. And there's a link on the right side to all the families, and at that blog site as well, a lot of the feeds of our sister and brother podcasts can be found up there. You can also go directly to our own page at www.comicbooknoise.com/topcow.
Which is a great place for all those show notes.
That's right. When we talk about show notes and links, there's links really to every episode. And if you're interested in them, you can go to that website and they'll be there, clickable and ready to go. We want to thank Westfield Comics, our sponsor, for giving us the space and the encouragement to do this podcast. Westfield can be found in two locations in Madison, Wisconsin, near downtown off of Williamson Street and on the west side just off of Mineral Point Road. If you're not in Madison and not traveling to Madison anytime soon, you can still do business with Westfield Comics at www.westfieldcomics.com. They can meet most or all of your needs as long as you're not dumpster diving for a copy of Action Number One or something. Westfield can definitely dial you in to recent back issues and subscription services. We've got some donuts to start with. I need the sugar today, I think. And today we've got something tried and true that you're likely to be able to try at home if you're listening along. We've got a box of Enemans, the 8 Chocolate Lovers Variety Pack Donuts. And Enemans is available pretty much everywhere across the country. They are a bakery in Brooklyn, New York. I don't believe these came from Brooklyn, New York. I believe they're licensed out to a local bakery. They're your typical grocery store box donuts.
Yeah, it isn't quite telling us where they were actually made. But we can tell you this is Chocolate Lovers Variety 1382. I'm assuming they only have one Chocolate Lovers Variety, but you never know.
So seek them out. They're the there's a variety, and at least half the box has the kind of wax donuts variety like you might have been used to before. But, you know, they're tasty, and they do for breakfast.
Some days you can't complain.
And today we are talking about Cyberforce Hunter Killer. And it was actually suggested by one of our listeners who is known on Twitter as 94. That's the number 94, Rocket 95. So the whole address is at 94 Rocket 95. And JMS has been looking for some Cyberforce Hunter Killer discussion and says, I liked Cyberforce Hunter Killer a lot. The end begs for a sequel, though. I think we'll agree with that when we talk about it. Hunter Killer, to me, was an underrated mini. So we're going to talk about Cyberforce Hunter Killer, the trade paperback that is out and in print by Top Cow Productions. And we're going to spoil the book, although I don't plan to walk through the story necessarily. I will tell you that even if you do get the gist of the story and the couple of spoilers that we will talk about in here, still worth picking up.
Definitely. Actually, we'll go with a little comparison shopping here. You can get this in multiple formats.
And that's a good point, because we read it in multiple formats. So we're going to talk a little bit. And we'll probably talk as much about the reading experience of the book as we will about the book itself. I had a hard time shaking it down one day when I was looking for it this weekend, so I ended up buying the trade paperback in digital format from mydigitalcomics.com, and that was an interesting experience. I have read an issue or two here and there of a digital comic, but I haven't sat down and made that my strategy before. So I did read through this entire trade in a digital format on a computer screen.
I read through it not only on paper, but sandwiched between a fancy-schmancy hardcover thanks to someone who was
nice,
very kind, and gave me a copy of that for a gift.
Ooh, that's a good gift.
Yeah.
Because I will say, if I was going to give an overall review, I enjoyed this book quite a bit. And it was useful to me because my first exposure to Cyberforce Hunter Killer was in Artifacts 5. I hadn't read of it. I've heard of Cyberforce before. I may have seen the issue here and there, but I never really, I've never read it. I didn't know anything about the characters until Artifacts 5. So it did make me interested in picking up this trade. And I'm glad I did because it's written by Mark Waid. The art is by Kenneth Rocafort. Colors by Sonny Go of IFS and letters by Troy Pateri. And Mark Waid, it's really easy to see that Mark Waid wrote this book because he's definitely a continuity wonk, and I think he's really good at characterization. And he did a nice job with Cyberforce Hunter Killer, especially in the first two issues. There was a lot of exposition and introduction, but it was all couched instead of somebody sitting around pointing out who everybody is. You got an introduction to their names and their skills, but also by displaying what they can do and then explaining. So I didn't really know a lot of these main characters, but I know them a lot better now by following that first issue.
And those of you who might have picked up the free Comic Book Day issue back, oh, this was quite a while, well, not too horribly long ago. Maybe it was it 2 years ago? 2 years ago. You actually got about the first 12 pages or so, and you got something that the rest of us reading in the trade didn't get, which was all of the kind of profile pages. Like you said, John, Wade introduces everyone pretty well, so you don't necessarily need all that stuff. And
the book starts off with an advertisement for something called the Jet, which is, you know, Bluetooth to the nth degree, actually. It's just kind of like a hearing aid insert in your ear, and it basically holds your contacts, and it maps your contacts in your brain, and you can say a name and call them, and you can do telecommunications and other things just by inserting this and having it in your ear. And it's an advertisement piece to open the couple pages, and it really gives you a Big Brother kind of foreboding of what this technology would do, and also implies that it's the latest, greatest hot tech out there. That moves over to a torture scene with Damper, who I learn is a member of Hunter Killer, and his power is to be able to disarm other Ultra Sapiens or other powered people.
Some of the guys have some helpful code names, definitely. Damper, dampens powers.
And we talk about what he's doing and how he's and how he interacts and knows about Morningstar. And Morningstar is the creator of the Hunter Killer race that we find out. Well, race is probably the wrong word to use. The Hunter Killer mutation or
I'm trying to remember back to the Hunter Killer series days, which, and it's not really mentioned here, he did kind of develop the technology, but I think, like, latter generation Hunter Killers might be, they might be a new race.
And I think, well, here's the proof, I guess. Right here in black and white, Mark Waid writes in the exposition that he created a tattoo graft, and it changed people, gave them different superpowers. They were a new race. Morningstar called them Ultra Sapiens. So
there we go.
There you go. I didn't get incorrect on that. That's good.
And I completely didn't remember that, even though I just reread all of this last night.
Well, through the torture and the exposition about Morningstar, so what I'm getting from it, as I say, I'm learning about all these people as I go. What I'm getting from it is Morningstar's behind Hunter Killer, and it shows him in some pretty bad behavior. He has somebody hooked up to a machine and interacting with a computer, and they're definitely up to no good. This guy is really showing himself to be after world domination or something. You know, it's on that kind of path.
He's just trying to help people. He's not up to shenanigans.
Right. And Damper's torturer is revealed to be Ellis, who's another member of Hunter Killer, who's also been on the lam, apparently. He's a maverick thinker, and his skill is to be able to sniff out Ultra Sapiens, wherever they may be. And he has just been cross-examining Damper to make sure that they weren't really on his trail, that if he was around, it was kind of coincidental. But that's the first exposure I got to the kind of the hunter-killer side of things, and my first exposure to Morningstar and where he fits in.
I actually, while we're talking about exposure, not that I'm going to be exposing myself anytime soon, since you mentioned it earlier, I actually had read Hunter-Killer way back, probably shortly after the first trade came out, which is a very affordably priced $24.99 for like 12 regular issues, profile book, a zero issue. It's a nice, fat, inexpensive trade.
So it's like an omnibus style or something.
Yeah, kind of similar to the Ultimate Collections Marvel does. Mm-hmm. And Cyberforce and I go way, way, way back. Because I started reading it when it first came out. I haven't read all of it. A lot of stuff in the second volume I didn't read after the Wildcats crossover, Killer Instinct.
And this is where I think I have an advantage over a lot of people I know and probably a lot of listeners of this podcast, is that I haven't read any Cyberforce. I haven't read any Hunter Killer. So I've got all that ahead of me.
Yeah.
There is tons of content that I've got ready to read.
And I'd say you can even more objectively probably say how well the characters are introduced. Because obviously I can be like, oh yeah, that makes sense. That's who that is. But I'm not coming to it new, so I don't know how well the introduction really works.
But. Well, it does work well in this trade paperback, and the next couple of issues bring us to the lighthouse, the watchtower, or whatever the headquarters is called for Cyberforce. And Hunter Killer is directed to come in and hunt down Cyberforce. And in the midst of their attack and fighting each other, that's where we learn about the individual skills of both teams, as basically Cyberforce pretty much takes the upper hand and is able to defend their house, although you can see that as teams, they're pretty well matched, and if they fought five times, one would win twice and one would win three times, probably.
Yeah, I'm going to put my money on Cyberforce, though.
Well, they seem to make an easy go of it in this, and you get kind of to the degree where some people are starting to get injured. The lighthouse is just torn to shreds, and Ellis reveals himself and says, basically, hey, listen, we're fighting each other, but we have a common enemy. We've been pitted against each other in order to take each other out. It's really Morningstar who's the enemy and what he's doing.
Oh, and this probably doesn't matter too much, but Hunter Killer is kind of the squads that Morningstar sends out to kind of round up Ultra Sapiens. So not really every single Ultra Sapien is a Hunter Killer, though he generally, I don't know if that's explained in the original series, what he's going to do after he hunts them all.
Well, he hunts them. I'm thinking by implication that he wants them killed after that. Taken off the board, as it were.
Yeah, well, the ones that he can't bend to his will. In which case, then they're mostly, I think, just about, yeah, domination. So then they're probably, I suppose then they hunt and kill other things. So, yeah. Yeah, but just so, you know, people aren't like, oh, why is one Hunter Killer fighting another Hunter Killer? Because technically, I guess he's not really a Hunter Killer anymore. But.
So the Cyberforce group, I don't know how it may have changed. One thing I found reading through this is there are a lot of Hunter Killers out there. Even though we're dealing with a core team here, that we're familiar with Ellis from the artifacts and this core, it seems like there are more out there who either aren't in this trade or may cross over into this trade. Not so familiar with how Cyberforce goes, but you have some core characters that make a big impression, like Ballistic and Velocity. Ballistic, obviously, is a sharpshooter, can shoot anything anywhere. How does she describe it? She can shoot something off a fly without thinking about it, or something off a dog, but
I think it's to shoot a tick off a dog without the dog flinching.
There you go. And Velocity is the speedster. Ripclaw is, well, as is described, he has some pretty indestructible claws and a very forceful fighter.
Heatwave has his crazy plasma-y powers. He gets incapacitated kind of early.
Yeah, they take him out first, which kind of shocks some people into reality. Ripclaw sees through some disguises that are put up, but when Heatwave goes down and Velocity tends to him, pretty much everybody hits the timeout and works on saving him, because Architect, one of the members of the Hunter Killer, has the power to visualize a structure and either create it or repair it or alter it. So if he's in a building, he can alter the building. If he imagines a building, he can imagine somehow altering it in such a way that transports them there. So it's kind of an interesting skill that I don't fully understand yet, but I have seen it do some cool things in this trade.
Real quick about the artwork. I remember reading this as it came out in single issues and being pretty impressed with the artwork. A couple years later now, Kenneth and Sonny have been working together on Velocity, and wow. Like, I mean, what's in here is, it's good, it's great, and probably at the time I didn't think they could up it anymore, but, you know, now looking at Velocity, I'm kind of awestruck. It's like they really kind of upped their games.
Yeah, and I really like seeing artists and art teams develop over time. Especially if the stuff they're doing is good to begin with. Because I do like the art in this quite a bit, but you make a really great point of how far they've come as artists. So once they team up, they split into three groups, and Ellis has some information that the headsets, the jet technology that are inserted into ears, are controlling others. And at this point, they believe that they're sucking out information in order to get cross-information on other people who don't even have jets. And they find, and Ellis has some information that they're controlled by three different hard drives in three different places around the world. So they split up into teams, kind of mixed up. And the short of it is, those hard drives are pretty well protected, and they pretty much get it handed to them by some Ultra Sapiens created by Morningstar to protect those. But Morningstar doesn't want to remain out of pocket, so he pretty much pulls everybody to his place.
And speaking of more Ultra Sapiens, I forgot to mention this earlier. You were talking about the structure of the teams and this and that. Cyberforce is pretty close-knit. They were all kind of people that kind of rebelled, got away from Cyber Data. The Hunter Killers, generally not the ones that rebelled. They just kind of knowingly work for a giant evil corporation, except for Ellis. But Phil Hester introduced kind of a B-team in a couple issue arc of The Darkness. So,
yeah, I think we've mentioned that on a previous show.
Yeah,
so
I think the issues,
some of that out.
I want to say the issues that Wiles Portacio drew. Don't quote me on that, though.
But we'll put a link in the show notes.
Heck yeah.
Hint, hint. www.comicbooknoise.com/topcow. So Morningstar basically takes the teams at their darkest moment. He's captured some of them and have hooked them up to his mind-sucking devices, or whatever you want to call it. The short of it is, a lot of fighting ensues. This is a really terrific action trade. And through some pretty interesting twists, they're able to defeat Morningstar. He actually, instead of taking information away from people, is pushing information out to mutate them into maybe a next-level Ultra Sapien across the world, so he would have some soldiers across the world in some ways. But they're quick to fight. It's not easy to defeat him, but they end up doing so. And the same technology that they were using to send signals out to people and control them, Damper shoved himself out of the way, and he hooked himself up to the device in order to shut it down.
You really were not kidding when you said we were just going to go over a little bit. And wow, I wasn't expecting that much of a jump. I should have made notes here where I was actually going to... I was going to mention some stuff.
Yeah, well, fill stuff in, because I'll move it around into chronology.
I'm just trying to remember now, because I didn't make notes thinking, oh, I'll still page through. Things will jump out at me. Oh, so Velocity was using a jet. Velocity gets rewritten into a Ultra Sapien, which is really interesting, because when I originally read this, you know, I'm like, oh, okay, she's got it. Maybe Wade or whoever else will bring it up in the future if they're writing some Cyberforce stuff. But then last night when I was rereading, having read... Oh, huge spoiler alert here if you're a Velocity reader. Ready? Okay. So at the end of Velocity number 3, Velocity's, for all intents and purposes, dead. And of course you're like, well, how's she going to be undead? Top Cow didn't even make a big deal about how Velocity was going to be dying in Velocity number 3 for 6 months. So my theory is somehow using the jet tech and possibly a combination of all this other infrastructure and stuff, somehow Velocity will be brought back.
Well, they do allude near the end of the book, once they have reversed the course, they note that everyone is still infected and mutated. It's just dormant now and should stay dormant. But then that opens up a world of storytelling possibilities.
Definitely. Yeah, there's a lot of setup here, too, which is nice because it's kind of one of those, oh, hey, there's, you know, not everything is resolved, but there's kind of the, okay, we know something could still happen, which is kind of nice because even if it's not Wade, someone else can come in and be like, oh, okay, there's stuff here to work with. Even last night when I was reading this, I forgot that originally Morningstar and, I don't remember what CyberData's name was in here in the beginning. They had like a new company name, but we know it's still the same old CyberData shenanigans. They were looking for someone. And the very, very last page, they show who that someone is. Longtime Top Cow Cyberforce fans will know him by the name of Stryker.
And that was a notable way to end the trade paperback for me because the story seemed fairly self-contained. It left itself open for a continued story somewhere, but it was satisfying that the story came to a conclusion. And then they tease it out that they were really looking for someone, and it showed some guy I never saw before, and I wasn't really sure who it was, and I had to... You know, I didn't even know, and I wouldn't have known who it was if I didn't have the trade version of this, because the way I found out who this was by reading one of the bonus features in the trade is that they put Mark Waid's script in there for issue 5. And I'm so glad that that's the issue they picked to put in there, because then I knew how the book ended.
Well, and it's, well, of course you kind of knew how it ended because you read it, but...
Well, yeah, but I don't know who the Stryker guy is. Yeah. They didn't name him in that last panel, so I just see that there's some mercenary-looking guy carrying multiple weapons who's kind of has half a head, so who knows what he's about. And I'm interested in learning more, but you don't know, is this somebody we like? Is this somebody we don't like? Is this somebody who's trouble? Is this, you know, who is this? So it didn't turn me off. That made me, you know, feel that I was unsatisfied, but... It was funny, I had no idea who this was except, okay, this is somebody that's meaningful to somebody who's been reading these books for a while.
Yeah. It's a nice change of pace because, you know, normally it's, oh, here's the first issue script, and it's like, oh, great, hey, look. Whereas first issues tend to generally be introductory stuff anyways, it's kind of nice to see the, now that we got that out of the way, how does it really work with the rest of the storytelling? And since we're talking about the last page specifically, it's pretty bare bones. Splash for the, you know, letting you know. So there's not much of a panel breakdown. And then a couple captions. But the description for the splash page looks like it's about 4 lines of text. And all of it is blacked out in this script except for full page shot of Stryker. Now, I'm assuming that stuff isn't, oh, he's wearing an overcoat, his, you know, extra arms on his right side, which he has. If you didn't look too closely at the artwork there, that's why he's got one hand holding a gun.
I learned that from
a gun.
From the Top Cow message board, actually, trying to figure out who he was.
Right.
So I can tell you what's in that blacked out section, because I got the digital. And this is something that may interest Philip or anyone else if they happen to listen. The PDF file of this, as I'm scrolling through it, I'm on an old Lenovo notebook running XP, and the graphics card's pretty lousy, and the file loads slow. So basically, the processor's so slow that I get the panel, and then I get the coloring, and then I get the lettering as layered files in the PDF. So when I was going through the scripts, I got to there's two sections that are blacked out of Mark Waid's script that are, you know, and it's clear that it's internal notes. But the blacked out section, depending on how my processor's doing, sometimes it just scrolls there and it's blacked out. But as I kept going back and forth, it was slowing down as it buffered, and I would be able to go backward one page and then forward and see the read the section before it was blacked out. It was like a split, less than a second at a time. So, I mean, how do you not do this? I was flipping back and forth from page forward and backward again until I read the whole thing. And what I did, I don't know that there's anything that anybody wouldn't want told, but it's kind of interesting. And the only thing I'll say is that it's a note from Mark Waid to Philip in the last panel about coordinating things with Robert Kirkman.
Huh.
So I hope I didn't tick anybody off by revealing that. But you should know that that the Top Cow trade, if you have blacked out space there, you might want to just rescan those pages to put them in the PDF.
Huh. So is that kind of stuff on the preceding black section too, or does that deal with something else?
It's on the preceding. Well, it's internal notes for sure. It's like, it's kind of like a setting up, this is kind of what I want to do kind of thing, but it's not. I mean, that was the one I remembered. It didn't seem important enough to even remember. I can probably try and look at it.
Because when I was looking at it, I'm like, oh, because the other nice thing actually about this script is not the digital version, obviously, because there aren't really. Well, I mean, there are technically, it can be set up so they're right and left-hand pages. But script is on the left page in the Trader hardcover, and the original uncolored artwork is on the right-hand page. And I'd looked at the page, and so, you know, I didn't have to even flip around, and I'm like, oh, panel two. I mean, it's really just Psyblade and Heatwave talking, so I assume nothing in this panel description would give anything away. I mean, it's not like, and there's a crazy giant symbol in the background that's going to end up being a symbol used 3 years from now. So it wasn't something that was really like, oh.
Yeah.
I mean, it was weird.
Yeah,
but then when I see page 20 here and it's all full page shot of Stryker.
Yeah.
Of course, now that you say that, I'm kind of guessing what it probably leads into, but not going to say anything because...
Yeah, I'll leave that guess to the listeners. I've already said too much, I'm sure.
That probably won't be out for a while, but...
But I do say that in order to, I guess, let the Top Cow production folks know that their block didn't necessarily work all the way.
Well, they don't expect someone to be using ancient hardware.
Yeah, right. Well, see, always expect the unexpected.
Of course, it makes me wonder how well my, 11-year-old Macintosh would do with its single 400 gigahertz processor. No, megahertz. I would say gigahertz there on accident. Trust me, it's not a 400 gigahertz processor. That'd be awesome.
That would be, I would never know. I would never even know that you could see these words, so... Yeah. I guess, you know, time is on your side, Top Cow, but something that you might be interested in.
Yeah.
There was parts of me that really liked reading it digitally. It was frustrating for me because, as I said, it's on an old Lenovo laptop, and I read the first issue and a half before I thought, oh, hey, I can just rotate the view and fill it to the page, and then it'll be like a comic page. So it was kind of like a big, bulky, hinged iPad almost and in some ways. So from that perspective, I enjoyed the reading experience. If I ever get an iPad, watch out, I think. It's not in my immediate future, and I don't think that a whole lot of digital comics is in my immediate future for as long as I've got to read it on a computer screen, because it's kind of cumbersome, the scrolling up and down and through pages.
Yeah. Well, when it's a laptop or a desktop. But yeah, as soon as you get that iPad, yeah, all you publishers are going to have to watch out for all that extra money you're going to be getting.
Yeah. Any other thoughts about Cyberforce Hunter Killer, Josh?
All the covers are in here, and there's some awesome covers in here. They are beauteous.
And that got me thinking, too, because I enjoyed looking through the covers that are included in the trade, and in all the Top Cow trades, actually, all the variant covers. And, you know, you kind of kick yourself, well, I'm basically a floppy comic reader. I like to support it as it goes along. I like to follow it as it goes along. And... You know, these are things I generally don't get, so it makes me go, well, do I jump back to wait for the trade? I'm not planning to. I still plan on keeping the floppies, but, you know, I've been reading the Darkness in trade, and maybe I just stick with that just to get these bonus features.
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, some people are kind of need to have it now whenever I can get it. I'm not as much like that. I'm kind of, you know... I'll be patient, I'll wait for it, because then I can read it all at once, but yeah, then I get, you know, I mean, I love the pretty pictures, so getting to see, you know, pencil versions, colored versions, this and that. Oh, that's what the hardcover looks like. That's a wraparound.
Oh, that's a nice wraparound. So it's a, that a sleeve or is the hardcover itself?
It's printed on the cover itself. For those of you not following possibly right now, it's kind of a, it's basically a wraparound cover. Ellis's nose actually ends up on the spine. But the front cover has Cyberforce, back cover has Hunter Killer while they're facing off. Pretty awesome. There's some like spot varnishy stuff on it too. Oh, this cover was awesome too. How sad is that? Now I'm just talking about how awesome the extra covers are in here. The San Diego variant.
Yeah, I noticed that.
The Frazetta-ish. Man, that's awesome.
Yeah, it is. That's a good one. I went back and looked at that one, I must admit.
Going back to the first issue, and you really don't have to cut this out.
I don't plan to now. I decided against that.
We're jumping around.
It's a podcast. You know, it's supposed to be a little rough.
Yeah, the first issue, actually, in the last few pages, I felt like it kind of... It almost got choppy and then felt like it just ended. But I don't remember that from when I read the issue originally, so I don't know... I don't know what changed my view of it. Yeah, I mean, I went back and I read it a little slower. Not that I was, like, speed reading it or anything, but I just went back and read it. I'm like, all right. So kind of from a storytelling perspective, it seemed a little goofy right there. Nothing to worry about, like I said. You know, you just go back a couple pages, maybe down your tempo a little bit. Oh, they're actually, and in the first issue, too, there's a few of the Hunter Killer team that show up kind of when they're all ready to take on Cyberdata that don't show up in the rest of the book. But they are, like, regular characters from the original series. It was just kind of weird because there's this goofy red-masked guy right
here. Yeah, I like, noticed that. And then other players that weren't...
That guy looks like he has a pretty cool design. It's crazy. Looks kind of like a Reaver, maybe. But, it was one of those things I actually didn't even notice it until today when I was flipping through right when we started that I'm like, hey, those guys didn't show up later on in the book. Man, I really want Velocity number 4 to come out now.
Yeah, I've liked that. I'm looking forward to that, more of that coming. So we recommend this highly. It's a fun trade. We agree with 94 Rocket 95 that this just sets up into the next... how about an ongoing? I mean, another trade story arc would be fine, but this can definitely support an ongoing. I like the dynamic and the friction between the teams. We saw a little bit of that in Artifacts 5, and that was also enjoyable. And so more. We're asking for more, Top Cow.
Oh, and this isn't a spoiler if you've read Artifacts. And obviously I already spoiled some Velocity 3, but I'm spoiling some more. At the end of the book, actually, team members switch teams. Ellis and Heatwave kind of flip-flop. Partially to be sure that, you know, the Ultra Sapiens, that Velocity's Ultra Sapienness doesn't kind of get out of control, so Ellis is there to kind of help. But also then Heatwave's kind of like, no, you know, I'm going to go with them, so we kind of balance
keep
out.
Keep balancing the teams, yeah.
Keep an eye on each other. It's great. As for an ongoing, I don't know. The last series was, like I said, about, you know, I mean, it was a year plus. It did run into issues where it wasn't necessarily drawn by the same person, which isn't always horrible. It just didn't seem as planned out, say, like Artifacts was. Not that it's not worth checking out. Like I said, I mean, it's 12-plus issues for $25. There's way worse ways to spend $25. I don't know. I mean, I want more. At this point, though, I'm used to seeing these characters drawn by Kenneth Rocafort now. I mean, because he's done this. Mm-hmm. He's doing Velocity.
Yeah, I liked his stuff quite a bit, so I'm looking forward to more of this.
As far as I recall, there's another Madame Mirage coming out, and he, you know, did the first one of those, so I'm like, I mean, this guy can't... I mean, I want him to draw a lot of stuff. I'm guessing he's just not physically capable, because... I mean, literally, I wouldn't mind him drawing probably 3 or 4 books a month.
Oh, yeah. Put him on the short list.
Got to draw the line someplace.
So, with the ending, do you think that Stryker will show up in Artifacts somewhere? Or do you think that that is just destined to be the next story arc of this, you know, trade paperback series?
Well, I don't know if when you were searching around the Top Cow message boards, this was mentioned Stryker actually has, not only is he a member of Cyberforce, he has another team that he heads up called Strike Force.
Oh, yeah.
There was a miniseries, I want to say maybe 5 years ago. I want to say Tyler Kirkham drew it, which I didn't read. I don't know the standing of all those characters, so maybe it'll be something where Strike Force will show up maybe at the end of the second arc, maybe to bail a whole bunch of people out, and then a whole bunch of people leave. But off the top of my head, I would say no. Well, he's got to, almost. Not that everyone from Top Cow has to show up in Artifacts, but
well,
I figure...
Well, it is a crossover. You know, yeah. They're pretty clear that it's this is a crossover event.
I figure the name's got to show up, so yeah, I guess he's... That'll be my guess. Somewhere near the end of the second arc, because it's kind of the action-y sci-fi arc, Strike Force will show up to help bail some people out.
So watch out for that. We are. And one thing we want to do, the month of February has ended, and we want to announce the name of the winner of the February contest. What did we give away, Josh?
That's a great question. I don't remember off the top of my head. It's over in my office. But...
Was it... Witchblade 139, signed by Ron Mars?
That sounds right. The issue drawn by Michael Gatos?
Yep.
The Stjepan Sejic cover?
It's on the way. We got a lot more names this time than the last time, so we're grateful.
But not enough. We need more.
We still would like some more feedback and some more people touching base with us. We did do the Randomator or whatever the...
Random.org.
Okay, Random.org. Everyone was assigned a number. Random.org chose... Russ Hagen. So sounds like we're sending something overseas.
Actually, in all honesty, I haven't sent Donnie's out yet. I didn't forget, but it's one of those things where my schedule's goofy and I had to talk to some people out at my warehouse about some stuff.
So still something to look forward to, Donnie. Your book's on the way from January, and Russ, we've got some stuff coming to you for February. We will have a March contest, and this one will... be a little more challenging than just send your name. In fact, I think it was Russ who gave me a hard time for how easy this contest was. So we're coming up with something, and then in the next episode, we'll announce what the hot new contest will be for the March 2011.
I was actually kind of okay with us switching from more contest-oriented to giveaway-oriented. Well, and Russ says it's easy, but there might be plenty of people out there that don't know they're wrestling.
Well, we'll do it based on participation you can win, but based on if you'll jump through a hoop for us, maybe you can get a little bonus.
Yeah. Hey, you know what? Just because I feel like making this even longer, even though I don't know how long it is, C2E2's coming up.
Yes, sir. You're going to spend at least 4 days there, aren't you?
Well, I'll be going to the Retailer Summit first, which starts Thursday morning now. Pre-noon, because heaven forbid it start afternoon, like it originally was scheduled to not that long ago. Because, you know, some of us don't want to make plans for things. I'm sure I'll have many trips by the Top Cow area of what I'm guessing is probably the Image setup. I think it's going to be fun times. So if you're in the Chicago area, St. Patrick's Day weekend, check it out.
And message Josh on Twitter at Josh Crawley, C-R-A-W-L-E-Y. And let them know you're going to be around, because it's fun to hook up at comic conventions. You can always like to meet like-minded folks.
Yeah, I like to hook up at comic conventions.
Wasn't exactly what I was talking about, but Josh seems interested, so check him out. Have a beer or just meet on the floor and talk some Top Cow, talk some comics. It's always fun. I'm still flip of the coin right now. It's not looking super good for me to go this year, but... we're planning to go next year, and I want to try and talk some of the guys with Reed into doing a expanded podcast alley and
see
if we can't get a table there. That would be kind of fun.
Actually, just to draw this out even longer, I'd actually been thinking, because I'm like, people come into podcast like other podcast alleys, not that I've ever done that, but I'm like, what if someone just comes to a table at a convention, like, oh, you have a podcast. It'd be cool if I could listen to it right now, and you're like, oh, yeah, you just have to, find a Wi-Fi signal, like those of us with a BlackBerry who can't easily get stuff sometimes through our data plan, which I found is a total pain sometimes. I'm like, oh, you could just have a laptop or something there and people could bring their drives. Then I'm like, oh, that's kind of annoying, or have discs. But yeah, that'd almost be, I don't know, do they set up like a wireless something in there just for that? That'd be cool. Someone should do that.
That would be cool.
Because, you know, you're in the alley, you're like, oh, I'm here. Now, it's going to be crazy traffic heavy, but, you know, if people can use that just for getting that stuff, that'd be awesome.
That would be. If it's not if it's not there now, I'm sure it's coming soon.
Discs
so.
Cost money.
This is how that's right.
And it's not easy to go, oh, here's my CD. I'm going to put it into my smartphone. Well, how?
Well, let us know if you're going to C2E2. You can tweet it out or you can email us at dtcpodcast@gmail.com. Again, we want to thank Westfield Comics. Check out Westfield Comics. They've got some interesting blogs updated weekly. They can be found at www.westfieldcomics.com. Have a great week.
Wait, not yet. There's one thing I forgot about.
Okay.
As my phone's ringing in the background. Well, not my phone.
We better get
my office phone. We're not supposed to be open yet. They can wait. So, what week is it? It's this week. Oh, last week, last Monday, Dwayne McDuffie passed away. And that was kind of sad.
That was
well,
a
not
surprise
kind of,
blow.
I mean, it was. And
I think that affected all of our days a little bit when that was announced.
Yeah, obviously, I mean, he, as far as I know, never did anything for Top Cow, so this is completely off topic. But, yeah, I just wanted to mention it because he did some great stuff, and he will be missed.
That's for sure. There's a lot of stories we're not going to hear now.
But remember, diversity in comics is something I think he really wouldn't mind being remembered for in. There's plenty out there, not just Top Cow. Obviously, this is Top Cow Podcast, but not just superheroes either. So go check some stuff out.
It's a big, wide world out there, and let's all participate in it. With that, we'll sign off until our next episode. Have a great week.
Good journey.